This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week's episode is brought to you by Bruce Lish, who we are wishing a happy birthday. Thank you very much, Bruce, for choosing to have your birthday celebrated here with special greetings, and we wish you a very happy birthday, and we will sing along with you shortly after this episode is over, and I want the rest of the listeners to join in with us then, too. But thank you very much for helping to sponsor this particular episode with your donation, and by also being a friend of the Magic Word and doing it in such a fine way to help celebrate your birthday. So again, happy birthday, Bruce. And we also thank all of the listeners who join us from week to week for around the world. And we continue to get nice comments and compliments on some of the episodes we've done just recently, for an example, like with Losander and also with Luis Carrion. Speaking of Losander, we are still in Las Vegas, Nevada, as we are broadcasting this particular episode. And I have a lot of content that I have developed over the last few weeks since I've been here in Vegas. I decided to take the month of June to be in Vegas, which has given me an opportunity then to see a lot of shows. And I have been doing some reviews of those shows, not all magic shows, but for the most part, probably 80% or 90% of them have been magic shows. And I have been doing some little video reviews, and I encourage you to go over to abra.tv, that's ABRA.TV, where you can see these reviews of some of the shows, well, all the shows that I went to see. So if you're thinking about coming to Las Vegas and you want my ideas of what to see, and also, I would point out that some of these are going to be limited run shows that we are talking about. Some have been running for a long time, but I think you'll enjoy hearing and seeing what I have to say about some of the shows that are coming up. Speaking of Las Vegas, that's the reason we are doing this particular episode this week, because when we were at Magic Live a few weeks ago, we happened to see Jeff Scanlon, who had a booth in which he was selling bottles. I guess you call them impossible bottles. They are things with impossible objects. Let me just say they are objects that it's impossible to get inside of a bottle. And the conversation that he shared with us, we first of all started recording this just as some additional content for one of the days of the convention reports as we were standing in line for breakfast. And then we sat at the table and were chatting. But as it happened, there was so much interesting content that he was giving me that I felt like this is more than just a casual chat. We need to actually sit down and have a proper episode, which includes more of this, because not only has he been taking over from Harry Ng from the standpoint of putting these impossible or things impossible, putting things in bottles that's impossible to figure out how he does this, but also he is a performer who studied under Eugene Berger in Chicago. He is a full-time professional performer, but also someone who does these bottles, which are pretty incredible. And I encourage you to go over to themagicwordpodcast.com, where you can see some pictures of some of the bottles that he has put these things in. I mean, like a tennis shoe inside of a jug of wine, or of course, obviously, playing boxes of playing cards. But the kinds of things that he puts in bottles, he talks about in this particular episode, and also some lessons he's learned from Eugene Berger. So first of all, I think it's fascinating from the standpoint of you learning about a little bit different art form, number one, and number two, I believe you will enjoy hearing what he has to say regarding some of the advice that that he has learned from Eugene Berger, which can be applied to you and your magic then too. So it's an interesting conversation. I know you're going to enjoy it. So please welcome my friend this week, Mr. Jeff Scanlon, here on The Magic Word. While we're standing in line over here waiting to go in for a breakfast and start our day, I'm here with another dealer, Jeff Scanlon. Scanlon, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so he's the guy who does the everything in a bottle, basically.
So impossible bottles, yeah.
Impossible bottles.
And I call mine bottle magic. So,
okay. What was the I guess, the evolution of coming to this and how that you got to do this? Because we were talking about Jamie Grant and others.
Right. Well, initially, as far as getting involved in the bottles themselves was in 1996 when the passing of Harry Eng, who was actually known as the godfather,
He had like scissors and all this kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. I've duplicated 9 of his bottles already. There's still a couple more I'm working on, but I've duplicated 9 of his bottles.
Let me back up just a little bit then. So are you kind of a puzzle master? I mean, was it something that Harry inspired you or what?
No, I never met Harry. I never even knew he existed.
Really?
What happened was that
I read Magic Magazine
about his passing.
Yeah.
And when I got done, I was so amazed by his thought process. And then I saw those bottles, and I said, I got to learn how to make those. Unfortunately, at the time, there were only 12 people in the world that knew how to make those.
Because he didn't pass it on, did he?
No, he never did, unfortunately. Which is good, but unfortunately today, everyone just passes stuff on, and it's really, really sad. But anyway, so I didn't know any of the people that made the bottles, so I sat down like, I have to think like a magician.
Right.
And so I spent 3.5 years of my life breaking bottles and ruining hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of decks of cards until I figured it out.
What is your full-time profession that gave you time to do this?
I was a professional magician at the time.
Okay, well, thank you.
Yeah.
So you had time in between shows.
I had that. So... Yeah. I mean, I did my shows and everything, but I spent a lot of time working on this.
And where do you live?
Right now I live in Arizona, but I was born and raised in the northwest suburbs of Chicago.
Northwest?
Northwest suburbs. So.
Around Elgin or?
No, I was born and raised. I was born in Arlington Heights, and I lived in Mount Prospect, and so that's where I met Eugene, and he became my mentor for the next 30 years. So. 18 years old, freshman in college. He came into my college. I was the only magician at the college at the time. He came in, did his close-up magic. I followed him around, blew off all my classes for the day just to watch him. Once he got done, I asked him if he gave lessons. He said yes. It started from there, and he was my mentor ever since. What happened was that back in... I used to use the Glorpy like everyone did. The big... bulky, paisley.
We have all kinds of magicians of different backgrounds and everything, and some beginners as well as those. So just explain Glorpy so for those who don't understand the hanky and how it works.
Glorpy was it was about 20, 24 by 24 square paisley piece of fabric that you would put a deck of cards into.
Usually a silk or something, but it can be a cotton or whatever.
But it was a silk. It was always made out of a paisley material. You put the cards in the center, and then you would do some things, and the Glorpy would, move around and rise from the cards. And
like there was something under the silk,
basically. Right, moving around in the center. Yeah. And so what happened was that I used to use it. The problem was is that for those people that know about Glorpy, I don't know if I should reveal a secret or not, but, there's a wire and the hem, and the problem was is that the wire was... Most people used it for making a card rise.
Right.
Well, a card is 4.5 inches in height.
Yeah.
The wires that they put in there were about 7 to 8 inches in height. So it's like, I'm going to make the card rise, and here's this thing that's like this high. So, and then the other problem was is that the wire would always eventually poke through the fabric.
Yeah.
And then it'd be exposed. And I used to like using them, but I hated all the things that happened. So what happened was that I one time went home, and I said, I'm going to rethink this thing. So I had a friend of mine that was a seamstress. So I went out and found a fabric that I liked. It had a nice black, at the time for me, it was a blue, solid blue textured fabric. And then I said, okay, I'm going to make it a little bit smaller so it's more manageable. And then I took the wire and I went out and bought some floral wire. And I said, I'm going to cut it so that when the cards are moving, it's going to be the size of a card at full length.
Right.
And then I said, in order to not make it poke through, I found some of this dip stuff that I could use, and I would dip it twice on each side.
Like Plasti Dip or something?
Yeah, exactly. Plasti Dip. And I then made up the wire, bent it the way I wanted, gave it to my seamstress and said, here's what I want.
By the way, I wonder about seamstress. If it's a male seamstress, would it be a seamster?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know.
So
but I gave it to her and said, this is what I want. and she made it for me. And I brought it home, and it worked beautifully. So the next time I had a lesson with Eugene, I brought it down with me. And I said, Eugene, check this out. And I showed him the whole thing. And he looks at me and goes, where did you buy that?
You got to do the voice.
Oh, I know the voice. Well, hello there. But he says, where did you buy that? And I said, I didn't. I made it. And he went, wow, that's very interesting. Maybe we should talk. And I said, okay. So I got my lesson. I went home. That evening, David Parr came over to his apartment. They were talking. I get a call from Eugene that night. Jeff, come on over tomorrow. We're going to talk. And I said, okay. So I went down to his house the next day. He says, I just got off the phone with the two guys that invented Glorpy. There were two friends in college. That's who invented Glorpy.
You remember who they were?
I don't know. I can't remember their names. But I know that they were college buddies and they invented Glorpy. And Eugene knew them. So he called them up. And he said, he told them what I did. I didn't know this, but he told them what I did. And they said, yeah, you can go ahead and use your thing. He says, but we want one. So I went down there, saw Eugene, and he looks at me and says, Jeff, we're going to go into business together. I said, what do you mean? He goes, you're going to make these up, and we're going to sell them. I went, really? And he goes, now I know that you did all the work, and this is your idea, but we're going to put my name on it, because if we do, we'll be able to sell them like crazy.
He has name recognition.
Of course. So I said, fine. And that, and to this day, when you get the instructions, at the very top it says, this is, you know, my version of Glorpy, thanks to the help of my student, Jeff Scanlon. First sentence. But it was actually my idea. But when we came up with this, we started selling these. And this was back in 1995, right around there. And I made them all up, and we've sold thousands. And you can only get them from either Eugene or me. That was it. You could not go to a magic shop. If you wanted them, you had to call us. So it just got to the point where I would make them all up. Eugene would call me, Jeff, I need, you know, 50 of them. Okay, hold on, and go down there, and, you know. And that's how it all got started. So what happened was that, and then with his Thought Center deck, I made those up for him. So I've been making those up since the Clinton administration.
Say Thought Center?
Thought Center.
Okay. I'll talk about that in just a second. Yeah. But for those two people who may be listening, wondering who Eugene is, we're talking about Eugene Berger.
Yes.
So,
Eugene Berger.
Yes.
So, magic beard.
magic beard. That's right. And so I guess those are available also on your website as far as the Glorpies?
Yes, they are also available on my website.
Different colors, silks?
That actually is in a different spot. That's under jeffscanlon.com.
S-C-A-N-L-A-N.
L-A-N, yeah. S-C-A-N-L-A-N.
So what about the Thought Decks? What are those?
And Thought Sender was just Eugene's. Eugene came up with this wonderful version of an improved, like, Devil's Deck. And he came out with several different versions. And Max helped Max Maven, Phil Goldstein, help Eugene with this new version of this thing. And it came out called Thought Sender. And it had to be made up. And Eugene didn't like to make things up. He liked to have
other people make it up.
You make it up.
I'll put my name.
I'll sell it, you know. But it was his. It was his deck. It was all his stuff. But he needed someone to make them up. So he came to me, his trusty student, and said, "Here's 12 of these decks. Here's how I want them made up. And can you make them up?" And I said, "Okay." So I take them home. 4 or 5 hours later, I have 12 decks made up. I'm like, oh my God, this is a nightmare. I brought them over to Eugene. He loved them. And I said, Eugene, these things are taking me forever. And he's like, well, it'll get a little easier as time goes on, you know. I picked up a system where now when I make them, I can make them in probably 15 minutes a deck, you know. So I can do I can do 12 decks in an hour and a half now. But yeah, it's just one of those things that I've been making those up since the Clinton administration for him. And that's how things got started. And so now since he passed away, on his letterhead, he wrote out this whole thing. He already told Max Maven about it and everything, but what happened was that he gave me the rights to both Thought Sender and Spirit Scarf when he died.
Wow, so. Oh, cool. What was some of the best advice he'd given you or some of the things that you had learned from him?
I would say there's a couple of things. First of all, do not ever become a trick junkie. That was rule number one. And I did not know what he meant. And he basically said, too many magicians going out and buy lots and lots of magic tricks. They come home, they learn it once, and then they put it up on the shelf, and they never touch it again. Mm-hmm. Don't ever become that. So that was number one. Number two that he taught me was, never learn magic from DVDs. Hmm. And he says, here's why. If a trick comes out that's really neat from a DVD, everyone buys it. Everyone takes it home. Everyone watches it and learns it the exact same way on the DVD.
Pattern all.
Pattern all. Which now means you have X number of magicians out there all performing the same trick, the same way, the same pattern. He says, now you become a trick monkey. Mm-hmm. Always learn from books, nothing else. So that was, I said, okay. So that was the other thing. And then the other things that he always told me was about framing of magic. Always ask yourself, what is really the piece about? And whenever you want to look at a magic trick, you would always say, what is it really about? There were times that I'd work on a piece of magic, and I would work on a piece of magic for 2 weeks. And I would show him, and he'd look at me and go, that is awful. Absolutely awful. And I said, why? And he goes, what's it about? You're doing a trick. Magic is not about doing a trick. Magic is about an experience. Magic is about transformation. Magic is about making someone understand really what's going on. It's about life. And so he always said to always focus on that. So those are just, you know, two or three things that he always told me to do.
So it's about the effect, basically. Make sure that you're going to be able to, and not, the method is immaterial.
Right.
It's really, it's the presentation and the effect of what it is in the minds of the audience.
That's the thing that I always tell when someone earlier who watched me give a demonstration, and he looked at me and he says, I can tell you were taught by Eugene Berger. Because even all the little cadence that you do are just like Eugene Berger. And I said, you hang around him for 30 years, you're going to pick some of that up. And I said, but one of the best compliments I ever got was when I used to perform at private parties and stuff. I used to actually get people that would ask me if I ever heard of a magician named Eugene Berger. And I would say, well, that's my teacher. And they would all look and go, I knew it. And I'd say, well, what do you mean? And they'd say, your magic is good. Your presentation of your magic is phenomenal. And that's what Eugene was always about. Eugene never did the latest cut, the latest this, you know, the latest that. He made everything look simple. But the story behind it, the backing behind it, that's what gave it such that impact.
Right.
Was the whole presentation of it. That's all I ever cared about, was doing just...
He would take a lot of small things and would seem to make them important.
Exactly, you know? Exactly. So
Well, it reminds me of Bill Wish, who studied under Slidini. I can see the impact of what Slidini has in the motions and everything that Bill does, even with his own magic he creates.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
So you started making these bottles.
So I started making the bottles, and once I figured it out, I showed one to Eugene. And I gave it to him as a present. But when he had students come over, they would see it and go, that's really neat. Where'd you get it? And then he would tell them. And then I got a couple of little things. Well, I got the cards in. Then I started working on, I got a bar of soap still sealed. Got that into a bottle. And just started working on it. And to make a long story short, 22 years later,
yeah.
I am now considered one of the top three to top five in the world for making these things.
You're the go-to guy.
I think right now, yeah.
Do people ever give you something and say, can you put this in a bottle?
I have. I've had people...
Custom thing.
I've had people like... One of the things right now is I had... I don't know. Do you know Mark Seta-Ducati?
I do very well. He's talked here several times.
Mark Seta-Ducati back in 19... what was it? No, I think it was around 2001, 2002. He sent me an email of a picture of the wine bottle, and it had a cork in there, and the corkscrew was inside the bottle being twisted up into the cork. And he sent me this, and he says, I wonder if Harry ever thought of, or if you could ever do. And I went, that's interesting. So I thought about it for 9 months. I had 80% of it figured out in a month and a half. It was that last 10 to 20% that took the time for me to figure out. Eventually, I figured it out, and I was the very first person to ever put a corkscrew inside of a wine bottle being twisted up. Now, since then, other people have done it a little bit differently. People are putting them into, like, alcohol bottles, but not really wine bottles. It should be in a wine bottle.
Yeah. And it should be a wine bottle.
Yeah. And so I have two of those actually here at the show now. So,
so it was something that was actually a, that Mark Sedicati had, had given you as a test kind of.
As a test.
Yeah.
9 months later, I passed the test and I did
A challenge, I guess.
Yeah, a challenge, exactly. And he's got, he also has some bottles from Harry, and he has the one with the tennis ball and the pair of Converse gym shoes in the gallon jug. And that was one that I always wanted to do. And so I figured out how to do that one, and I made that one.
Now, you said several other people have started to do this. Now, go back to Jamie Grant for just a minute, because he used to come here, and then I know we...
Right.
Go ahead.
Right. Well, he did it, and then there's just a lot of people. I mean, I've had a lot of people go onto my website and then just try and copy everything I do. And, like, there was a guy, and I can't remember his name, but there was a guy out in England, and I had three bottles. He not only copied them identically, he even gave them the same names. And I actually called him.
Vision.
Exactly. I called him and said, what are you doing? And he says, oh, well, Jeff, because you're my inspiration. I said, well, I'm flattered, but at least give him a different name, do something a little different. And so I've had that. I've had other guys, I don't want to mention who they are, but I've had other guys. I had one guy out of Germany call me up and give me a sob story about his daughter was dying, and he wanted to pass on. He did some impossible bottles, but he would ask me on how I did certain things, and he wanted to pass it on to his daughter before he died and went on. So I helped him out. We'll never do that again, because I ended up finding out that he not only was lying to me about it, but then he started turning around and selling the idea. And
lessons learned there, unfortunately.
Yeah, and it was just things like that. So I'm very, very, I keep things very close to the chest now when it comes to making up bottles.
Do you have a family you're going to be passing this on down to, your son,
well,
your daughter?
I've been married, next week will be 26 years, and I do have a daughter. She loves the bottles, but it's just something that she's not going to do. So I've had a lot of people ask me, are you going to pass your stuff that you know on?
Apprentice.
And I've been debating that. You know, it's like part of me says yes, and then part of me says, well, you know what? Harry never did. I may not do that. I may, because I'm still trying to figure out some of Harry's bottles. So I thought, well, what if I were to pass on? Someone can maybe try and figure out my bottles.
Well, I think the whole thing was Harry Ng had started, he was a teacher, I think, in college, like a logic class or something. He would create these bottles for his students to try and figure out,
no,
I think.
He actually taught... He taught out in California, and it wasn't college. It was actually, I think it was middle or high school.
Okay.
And there's a story that goes on, and I've been trying to find out and get it all verified, but I've heard it several times about how when he went out there to apply for the job, they said, well, we have, he said that he taught high-level education to the kids that were very smart.
Yeah.
And they said, well, we don't have a program like that. And he says, if you hire me, I'll give it to you. So they took a chance and they gave it to him. Well, all the kids that went in and took his class did extremely well. And when they did, like, the national testing and stuff, his classes always scored the highest.
Wow.
Now, here's the rumor. The rumor has been told, the story's been told to me in several different ways, was that he never used a textbook for teaching his classes. And what happened was that every time, every year when he took these tests, these kids would pass with flying colors and beat everyone else. And they always said, but Harry, you need to use a textbook for the class. And he said, as soon as my kids start doing worse than other kids, I'll use your textbook. And he never did. So that was one of the things that I've heard. And, I mean, just some of the stories that I've heard of things that he could do and the way he would think were just fascinating to me.
I think so. Very interesting then, too.
And so I've been just trying to keep his legacy alive, you know. I'm really, really trying to. And people forget, too. And that's the other thing I noticed, too, is that I see a lot of people are making these decks, and they look awful. They really do. They look awful. And they're selling them for dirt cheap. Harry never did. You know, Harry started off making the impossible bottles because of two things. One, there was always that joke of we only use about 8 or 10% of our brain power. So he always said, well, if that's the case, what else can I do that really can make us use more? The other thing, too, is that a lot of times he thought people were becoming mentally lazy. And that we weren't thinking enough and thinking more creatively, and we just want to try and find the shortcut to everything. And so that's what made him really start doing the bottles. And as you know, he went to all different conventions, and he'd bring his bottles, and he would sell them all out. Every convention he went to, all of his bottles sold. And that's how it really got, you know, well known. So that's kind of the thing that I'm trying to do right now, is I'm trying to make people think. So when they come by and, oh, how do you do this? And I'm like, I'm not going to tell you, you know. And the funny thing is that people, well, you know, there are four rules. And that's one thing also that people don't realize, is that one, every bottle has to be a bottle that you can buy at your local grocery store. Okay. Rule number two is that the bottle cannot be heated, cooled, cut, or manipulated in any way, shape, or form. Number three is that every item that goes into the bottle has to go in through the neck. And the rule number four, which is kind of the kicker, is that once the item is inside there, it still has to be perfectly usable.
So if you break the bottle, you can still use whatever the contents.
Yes. And that's what people forget. I mean, I've heard people, you know, I've seen on the internet people going, here's how you do this. And I look at it and go, no, you don't. You know, people are using glue and all this stuff. I'm like, I've never used glue. You know, it's like, because you got to think differently. I get people that talk about, the biggest thing was, is like, it was funny because when I first started, I one time put a Rubik's Cube into a bottle. And I showed it to some friends. And they all looked at me and they said, big deal. You just assembled it and reassembled it inside. And I said, you know what? You're right. Never made one again after that point. I said, because it's too easy to figure out how to do it. So I stopped doing it. So I started putting decks of cards into bottles. And one of the things that people don't know is when Harry made cards in a bottle, he either drilled a hole through the center so you could see all the cards, or he would cut the corner, the bottom corner of a box, so that when the cards were in there, you could see the cards sticking out of the corner. The only thing I didn't like about
deck in there.
The only thing I didn't like about that was that after a while, the cards started to kind of do a fan, like they would spread out. And I thought that looked a little awful. So I came up with cutting a window on the side of the box. That was my idea. Right now, you cannot find anyone that, if they're going to show it, they all do it on the side of the box now. But no one ever gave me credit for doing that. But I mean, I've been making these things since, like I said, since 1996. I get people that are calling me going, I've been doing, you know, impossible bottles for this long now. I'm like, yeah, and I see that you took my window idea, and I see that you did this, and, you know. And it's just funny because people don't realize that I've been doing this stuff for over 20 years. I've been selling these things all over the world, you know. So.
And so it was all self-made. Now, I talked about Jamie Grant a little bit earlier because he had his bottles of Wonder cost.
Send Wonder.
And so had you talked with him, or has he
I've spoken with him a couple of times, and what happened was that when he couldn't do it and I got a call from Stan asking me to come, I actually contacted Jamie and asked him for help as far as what do I expect and this and that. And he was a big help. And he was very nice to me, even though he knew I made impossible bottles. He made just the one bottle. I make all different kinds of bottles.
He just had cards in the bottle, right?
Yeah, just cards in a bottle. Unfortunately, everyone has copied Jamie DeGrant. Everyone now takes a deck.
Still not easy to do, though.
No, they're not easy to do.
It's time consuming.
It is time consuming, but it's also one of those things of you wish that people who were going to do these bottles would at least try and take a little more thought and be a little more creative with it.
Well, again, like Harry
copying
was,
people.
Where he had other kinds of things
right.
in normal use, like I said, whether it's scissors or you know, nuts and bolts. Or.
But for example, I have copied eight or nine of Harry's bottles. I have always given credit to Harry.
Yeah.
I've always said, this isn't my idea. This is something that I saw and I wanted to see if I could duplicate it. And I did. And wow, you know, and I was happy, but I always give credit to Harry. And that was the one thing that Jamie DeGrant always said that he liked, was he was always very, very happy on the fact that I always credited Harry Eng for his work. Because people have never credited me for some of the things I've ever done with the Impossible Bottles. And that's just kind of sad, you know.
It is. Do you think that someone is going to, again, carry this on beyond?
I don't know. And I haven't thought, you know, about it. But I did get a call about a week and a half ago from one of Harry's best friends. Because he has one of my bottles. And he called me a week and a half ago and he just said, Jeff, I wanted to let you know that if Harry were alive right now, he'd be extremely proud of what you have done with those bottles. Because he says, I haven't seen anyone compare to the way you do the bottles, like, you know, like Harry. And that really meant a lot to me.
Have you ever thought about having some sort of an art exhibit or in a gallery or a showing?
I did one back when I lived in Illinois. I did it over at the Northwestern University Museum. They called me up and I did a thing over there. I've tried in Arizona, but it's really hard. Art things are, you know, I've been trying, haven't figured out how yet, but I have been working on trying to figure out to get people to see these things because they really are amazing pieces of art. They really
That's what
are.
I was thinking. They are artistic,
yeah.
And they do cause wonder because when you go to a museum, you stare at something and you think about what the artist must have been thinking about. And when you're looking at that, you're thinking, how they get in there.
And that's what I'm always thinking about. Whenever I come up with an idea, I always think I want people to look and go, how in the world was that done? And I want to always make them think a little differently. And there's times where I'll have two or three items in a bottle that should not fit inside there. So instead of just having one, I'll have two or three. It's like, how in the world did you do that?
What are your best-selling things?
My wine bottles, for sure, are my best-selling because not many people can do it. You know,
go through wineries, probably. And
no, actually, I'm very fortunate. I actually have made friends with the vice president of a bottle distributor. So when I need certain bottles, I just call them up, and they'll ship me cases of it, and then I just, you know, pay for them and everything else.
I was thinking if you go to a winery, I mean, they have other things that they sell of T-shirts and hats and everything as well. If they had something like that, I would think. I mean, they've got a lot of upscale people who would, you know, pay high dollar for some of these things, too.
Well, I mean, you know, I actually have been just working on different things, but it's been pretty busy as far as trying to figure out exactly what I want to do as far as showcasing them. But people know about my website, and I, you know, just last month sold two of my In Case of Emergency bottles, one to Germany and one to France.
What's In Case of Emergency?
It's a taco sauce bottle where I put a full pack of Camel cigarettes inside, still sealed with the cellophane wrapping on everything, a box of 40 matches, and then a lock inside there, and it hangs with a ball on top. It's painted white, and it says, In Case of Emergency.
Gotcha.
And so it's kind of like the old, you know, breaking the bottle thing. So
now you have figured out how to do a lot of the things. There are some that are more time-sensitive. Tell me right, I guess, work-sensitive. It takes a lot more time.
Yeah.
What is one of the more difficult bottles that you built and make now?
Well, putting a pair of high-top Converse gym shoes into an apple cider jug, that's time-consuming. That's a difficult bottle. But like I said, I've been doing this for 22 years. After a while, you start kind of getting a little system on, you know, what to do. But wine bottles are still have always been the most tricky for me because they really just they're so tedious, but they look wonderful.
And how long would it take you to put something in the wine bottle?
In a wine bottle, it depends on what you're going to be doing it for. If you put just the cards in there, you're looking at hours, probably 4-5 hours to do that. Sometimes I'll have the deck hanging from a piece of rope in the middle of the wine bottle. That's just one more thing. That's just one more thing you have to do, putting the rope through there. I just finished making a new bottle, which I just sold out of here at Magic Live, where I put a 1900 series deck of cards
right
into a bottle, have twine going down through the deck, knotted twice, and then goes up. And then in another wine bottle, I put a gold bicycle deck of playing cards in there. And then I have a little wooden ball hanging at the top, and it has a chain that goes down and holds a 3/4 inch lock inside the wine bottle that when you pull it doesn't come out.
Wow. So. And you were saying you had the one with Houdini also, and because it was a special deck?
Yes. And one of the things, Harry was known for always putting a knot into his bottles. Big or small, he always put a knotted piece of rope. People always ask me, why don't you do that? And I said, I don't want to do that because that's what Harry did. I want to do what I want to do. So now my signature piece has become where I put a little wooden plunger into the bottle with a perpendicular piece of wood going through. That's my thing. So
phenomenal. So in closing, what is the website? Where can people go?
They can go to bottlemagic.com.
Bottlemagic.com.
Yep. And they'll see it all there.
The name of my podcast is called The Magic Word, so I often ask people, what is your philosophy of life? What is your phrase or your philosophy?
I always, in life for me, is always try to just think creatively.
Think what?
Think creatively.
Creatively, okay.
Think creatively. Whatever, I once heard someone say something and I thought it was so true. Whatever everyone else is doing, do the opposite.
I like that. That's
and
very good.
It always worked out. So if everyone else is doing this, I'm going to do the opposite. And it always got you noticed. It always got you further.
Great.
And it always worked out well.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks.
Good advice. Very fascinating.
Thank you.
The Magic Word Podcast. That was Jeff Scanlon. Scotty out. Thank you, Jeff, very much for being my guest on this week's episode. I appreciate your comments and insight as to, without telling us how you put things into bottles, but what it's like and what the process must take, and the creativity that you have to have in order to do these kinds of things. Anyhow, fascinating. And also, thanks for sharing the insights with your mentor, Eugene Berger, then as well. This has been great. Well, as I said to the rest of you then at the beginning, this particular episode is sponsored by Dr. Bruce Lish, and I want to wish Bruce a very happy birthday. And in fact, I've got a special guest performer from Beyond the Grave who is here to help share this birthday greeting with you. So please welcome Marilyn Monroe as she helps to sing Happy Birthday.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday.
Dear Bruce,
happy birthday to you. Everybody, happy birthday.
Well, that was some fun. Thank you guys very much for joining in and for letting us have some fun here this week. As I mentioned at the top of the episode, I'm here in Las Vegas. Last week, you enjoyed an episode with Lo Sander, who I went to see his show and had a chance to chat with him. There are some other people here from Vegas that I recorded some conversations that you'll be hearing in some upcoming weeks then as well. And we've got some magic conventions coming up soon. I hope to see everyone at the IBM convention in Atlanta, followed by FISM. So that's on the heels coming up in late July. So I hope to see much of the world there in Quebec, Canada then. And then following that is going to be the Abbott's get-together in Colon, Michigan. Gosh, just one thing after another. And there are other things following that, but one thing at a time. And so thanks for listening to this week's episode. And if you have not yet subscribed to the pod letter, please do. I would appreciate if you go to themagicwordpodcast.com, where you can then click on the link, and that way you can join the pod letter. Then you can find out who's going to be on from week to week and also get some suggestions from the archives then as well. And also, if you do have the financial ability to help us out a little bit, we certainly would appreciate that. Just for the price of a cup of coffee each month, just $5 or $10 or more, if you can afford it, that would be great. It would help us so much with through your pledge through patreon.com. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember to always try to think creatively. And whatever everyone else is doing, you try to do the opposite. This is Scotty out.